umalithi bazane ukuthi ubani ola bese siqala-ke sinikela kuthi bese siya ku-Mr. Treasurer and then Attorney General's office then namalungu eParliament.
Thank you very much, honorable members. My name is Thami Mseleku, Director General of Health, and I'm accompanied here by the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Health, Mr. Muller, and the Director of Finance, Mr. Andersen Fender. Those are the people from the Department of Health.
Thank you very much.
I'm Mark Fletcher from National Treasury Public Finance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Pramesh Bhana from the Auditor General, and I'm accompanied by Alice Miller from the Auditor General as well. To her left is Lily Zondo and Graham Randall, also from the Auditor General.
Thank you very much. Can we have members introducing themselves?
Henny Becker, member of SOPA.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Trevor Bonham, member of SCOPA.
E.B. Pule, member of SCOPA.
Henny Chen, SCOPA.
Ronald Mufgen, SCOPA.
Pierre John Gerber, SCOPA.
Thank you very much. I'm Comrade Temba Goti. I chair this committee. Once again, would like to welcome you, DG, and your officials to this session. We have had an engagement some time before. It is not for me to make a comment on what progress we've made since then when comparing the two annual reports, that is 2006 and 07, as well as 2005 and 6. But we're quite happy to have you here. And I must, however, acknowledge that subsequent to our discussions, when looking at this report, there are areas that we think have not moved as quickly as we would have loved. But equally, there are areas where there is definitely visible movement, and who wants that those areas must be consolidated and those areas that are lagging behind be tackled. I will hand over to Honorable Trent, and in view of the load of work that we have ahead of us for this morning, I will appeal to members of Parliament that let us ask questions and be pointed so that we can get pointed responses and be able to dispose of our work in time. Let us be cautious about the times allocated to us so that the subsequent hearings should not be condensed because we do not have time. Thank you. Honorable Chair?
Yes, Chair. DG, I'm going to do division of revenue as I did last time. I had a look at the transcripts, and I noticed the discussions we had around the challenges that you had in terms of the fact that you can't withhold money, you know, for example, when there are AIDS programs in progress, etc. And I don't want to go into all of it, you remember very clearly. But the one question I did ask you was whether you guys felt that the conditions were onerous, and that could be part of the problem. But we were assured by the Treasury that, in fact, the conditions attached to these grants and transfers are negotiated or discussed with you. So, you know, there should be consensus about that. So, just that's a little bit of background. So, I'm going to start with what the AG has said again. And this is going to be the main issue. So, it will take a little while before I put the question. NDLH has control frameworks in place. Now, that's good. You've now got control frameworks in place to honor conditional grants transferred to the provinces, but did not always adhere to this framework. The following instances of non-compliance were noted. And I just want to go through them quickly. He says now that you've got frameworks in place, that's good, it's improvement. Now, the non-compliance issues are three, and I will just go through them with you. Late submission of business plans for specific conditional grants by the provinces. Okay. The second one is late or non-submission of monthly financial and quarterly performance reports by the provinces. Thirdly, lack of adequate capacity to perform effective monitoring through quarterly visits and physical inspections. Now, if there is going to be someone else doing a question on capacity, but yeah, that does come through here, so, you know, maybe you must rule on that one. And then inadequate evaluation of information submitted in the provincial reports and the timeous identification of potential non-compliance conditions attached to these grants. And then significant inconsistencies in the information supplied in the monthly financial and quarterly performance reports of the provincial department. Now, these matters, most of them are now being raised for the third year in a row. And I'm not going to go through them, Chair. We can give the references if the department so wishes. But these matters are old matters that just continue. The only change has been that you've now got a framework in place. And that the committee appreciates. So perhaps I could just give us a response to those five issues. In fact, what is it that you've done to improve the situation in respect of each of them? Would you like me to repeat them one by one, or have you got them?
No, if it's honourable friend, you are making it very difficult for us. Because if you ask five questions at the same time.
No, that's why I thought maybe we just go through the five now.
Ask one question at a time.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Get a response and then move to the second.
With regard to the late submission of business plans for specific conditional grants by the provinces, what measures have you put in place to address that problem?
That's good. That's the one.
Thank you very much, honourable friend and member. Honourable sir, this matter is an ongoing matter, as the Honourable Trent has actually said. We do find it difficult to actually get the provinces to comply. Whatever measures we take, and I think we've taken this time and improved a whole range of things in relation to the measures to ensure that the business plans are submitted. Where we can, we have actually withheld the transfers of some of those grants in order to ensure that the provinces do submit those business plans. We have written letters, we have actually even approached political heads. We have agreed within the agreed frameworks of how we would actually address these matters. For example, we have had after the last meeting or the last report, we had a long discussion on these matters and raised our concerns about the fact that even as we try from provinces to actually get these business plans, the only thing we can do is to appeal and appeal and appeal. Where possible, to withhold the transfers. So indeed, there are instances, though they have actually now diminished, but there are instances where there have been provinces that have actually submitted business plans very late, in spite of our attempts at actually getting them supported earlier, so that they could actually be able to submit these. So the issue, Chairperson, for us is an ongoing issue that we can do so much in relation to ensuring that the provinces comply. We can put mechanisms for compliance or for control in terms of compliance. But once those mechanisms do not have any effect on the submission of the business plans, there's a point at which we cannot go beyond that, because of a whole range of things I don't want to get into. I did get into that time.
Okay.
So indeed, Honorable Friend, we do acknowledge that this is still a problem, but it's a problem that has to do with what provinces actually, what their attitude is towards these matters of ensuring that they submit these things on time.
Okay.
I think that's fine. See, I think that I'm going to just go to one which is sort of related to this, because this might take us a little deep in. The idea says that you have a lack of adequate capacity to perform efficient monitoring through quarterly visits and physical inspections. Now, I know that this isn't exactly the same thing, but it does have, it is connected. Because if you have capacity to go out to the provinces physically, then I'm sure you would be able to use that capacity to also try and, improve the other situations. And let me just then follow with one other comment of the AG, which was the delayed submission of monthly financial and quarterly performance reports. Now, I mean, I know that's really a treasury matter, but clearly it's linked to what you have to do in order to monitor the treasury.
Maybe
you can just tell us what have you done.
Let's get a response to this capacity question.
Yeah, that's what I'm my question. My question is going to come now to what have you done in order to address the capacity problem?
Okay.
Just specifically with regard to this particular issue. I know there are many other capacity problems, but just this particular issue.
Chairperson, the Auditor General and ourselves have had a lot of fun on this question. We continue to have fun on it. Just to illustrate, we have an HIV and AIDS unit, which in the last month has visited all 9 provinces. In fact, it's now in the 4th or 5th province, and intends to visit all 9 provinces. You've got that particular unit spending 2 days per province. If they spend 2 days per province, they would spend 22 days plus visiting provinces. And that's in the HIV and AIDS arena. In other words, among other things, looking at the conditional grant as well as other matters that relate to implementation of the program. So we've always been asking ourselves, Honorable Friend and Honorable Members, what is this capacity that we are talking about that would actually monitor provinces? If it is specifically for conditional grants, then we would have a bloated public service, because then we would have an additional capacity to monitor conditional grants only. Within an HIV and AIDS arena, in the TB arena, for example, that is actually needing attention in terms of monitoring and evaluation, when hospitals don't run properly or other programs don't run properly. So we've been grappling, and we continue to grapple with this issue of capacity to monitor, specifically for this conditional grant, in the manner in which we are called upon to do so. In fact, in our last discussion, as a department, we even felt that perhaps we should actually ask for a different arrangement on these matters, particularly for those conditional grants that, in fact, are now taken for granted. Maybe it's high time we took them to the provinces so that there is closer monitoring and we just have a national framework for expenditure. Because in our view and our humble opinion, there is no way we're going to be able to build the capacity that we constantly talk about to the Auditor General Chair.
Let's end it this way. The quarterly reports that you get from provinces, are they a composite report that deals with a whole range of functions, or you get separate reports on each program on a quarterly basis?
Well, they're separate on each program on a quarterly basis, particularly on the conditional grant.
Chair, can I just ask you, I hear what the...
Just a minute. I'm looking at the annual report on page 93, where on the right-hand side, I think the third paragraph or so from the top, where you are saying that the submission rate has improved. And all that. Then the paragraph down the line say to improve the quality, comprehensiveness, and timeliness of quarterly non-financial data, the department has implemented the following mechanism. There are a whole range of mechanisms that you have indicated there. And one of them, the second bullet from the bottom, says two dedicated officials in the department focus on ensuring that provinces can submit data timely. Maybe the question that will arise will be, are two dedicated officials enough to ensure that you are able to achieve the objective that's set up in that paragraph? I think when the question of capacity is spoken about, I think maybe we should look at it in that context. When we met earlier on, Treasury said, no, we've made money available to ensure that the department can employ people who should assist in monitoring the province for this grant. Here you have employed two. Two enough, or having financial constraints, would have loved to have five or six? I think the question of capacity, let's approach it from that angle. Yeah.
Chair, this is for the DG answer. I was going to just follow up because I made a note that the DG said here that if we had to do all this monitoring effectively, we'd lead to having a bloated civil service. That was the terminology used.
Now
we talk about two people. Now you've asked the question, how many people do you actually need?
Let him answer. I'll give you an opportunity to ask the question.
Thank you very much, Chair. You will note that your reference to page 93 refers to a broader monitoring and evaluation of data. It's actually talking about non-financial data in general, which is related not only to conditional grants, but to various other aspects of non-financial data that we need from the provinces. But of course, the aspects of the conditional grants, will relate to that. Now, for our purposes in terms of data collection, if you're talking about data collection and time and submission of that data, you don't need more than two or three people to manage that. In fact, you could perhaps go to three or four because you could just let them focus on three provinces per person. Because all you are dealing with is to ensure that there's a timely submission of data. Now,
as well as the quality and
the control of that data. Yes, but if you compare that to the issue of the conditional grant, where you are talking about business plans. That's not just data, but it's business plans. If you're talking about whether that data is actually verified, so you actually now need people who are going to go into the field to verify the data in relation to expenditure trends, whether actually there's an appropriateness of expenditure, etc. That's where I begin to say that if you do that for the conditional grants only, then there's a challenge because there's a bigger picture of what you are trying to do in monitoring and evaluation as a department. And therefore, the issue of monitoring and evaluation in that context is what I'm raising here, that if you're going to do it very well for this set of issues with a conditional grant, you will find that the provinces that's what they would also say is that they would respond by moving to a point where they say we have a billion a budget of more than 4 billion in our province. The kind of reporting that you require on a conditional grant of about 100 million that you've given us actually far surpasses the amount of quality monitoring and reporting that we would require and is required of us here. So that's why we are thinking, rather than bloat it in ourselves, let's solve this problem differently by taking the conditional grants there to the provinces where the capacity is and where all the audit capacities are, rather than building a capacity simply for the conditional grants here when we have a challenge of monitoring and evaluation in the whole system of ours.
Now, let me allow Honorable Trent. If there's something missing, I'll come to that question, because I think it's more a question of implementation over which, at an implementation level, I think there is no formula, you know, like in natural sciences, but we can discuss that. Let me allow Honorable Chan.
My problem is a very simple problem. The solution is not simple, but my problem is simple. Why do you have conditional grants if you can't monitor it? I mean, does it placing conditions on people getting money, and then you can't monitor it? But then you also have the problem is that if you're giving the money for AIDS, or specifically say for antiretroviral, you can't then allow the province to just use that money for something else. In other words, you want that money ring-fenced. I mean, really, that's what it's about, isn't it? So, you know, I think we sit with this problem, Chair, is that we've got a thing called a conditional grant. It's easy, as just pointed out, it makes up a very small percentage of the total provincial budget, and we acknowledge that. But yet, it's just something that goes on and on, persisting over and over again. But you see, maybe just before we conclude this particular area, Chair, maybe there's just one or two other issues that are related, which we should talk about, because, see, what the AG is also telling us is that because of the fact that there is no proper monitoring, you're getting a situation occurring here where, for example, an amount was transferred for the forensic pathology services grant and the training of health professionals. And then it goes on to say the grant exceeded the amounts approved in the individual business plans by 37 million and 108 million respectively. Now, I mean, clearly that happened because it's not proper monitoring and control over this money. I mean, you know, okay, you might say that the 108 million is not a lot of money in terms of a budget of 4 billion, but I actually think 108 million rand is quite a lot of money. And clearly what it was intended for was good, and the overspent. That doesn't mean that had a negative impact on the service that you were trying to provide, probably a positive impact. But the point is that there's got to be financial discipline, and that doesn't occur. So maybe you can just deal with this issue in respect of those issues as well, where because of the monitoring, there's this over-expenditure. Now, what do you do? The question should be, what do you do when you find over-expenditure? What do you do with the province? Whose fault is it?
Well, Honourable Friend, first of all, the paragraph is not referring to over expenditure, just to underline that. It's referring to the fact that the amounts transferred as per the schedule exceeded the amounts approved in the individual business plans. So in other words, what happened was that the final DORA actually had more money than what was envisaged when the business plans were actually approved. So it's not an over expenditure. Just to outline that and underline it. What actually that means really is that because we want provinces to do these business plans on time and submit them timely, some of the actions that we take also lead to these difficulties. For example, we say to the provinces, we have this indicative figure around which you must work, and then they submit the business plan, which we then approved accordingly. But that was prior to the publication of DORA, because you will recall that the finalization of DORA comes into the year already towards the
after the budget speech. So what then happened is that then there were no business plans submitted for the, in other words, the adjustment of the business plans that we had approved when the final figures came to give us more money than the indicative figure that had been given before. So it doesn't necessarily lead to over expenditure in that sense, because if it was vice versa, then that would be over expenditure. But what I'm trying to say in relation to that is that when we were trying to solve the problem of ensuring that there are timely business plans given, we have to actually say to people, you must work within the context of this particular amount and give us a business plan. Now, if there's an indication of more money, as it happened now, we would admit that perhaps what we needed to do was to request a resubmission of business plans now adjusted for that top up of the amount that had actually been indicated. And that's what the Auditor General is actually referring to. And we concede that perhaps that must have been an omission on our part. We assumed that the provinces would adjust accordingly.
There are other issues raised by the AG, but they all relate to the management and control of the conditional grant. And, you know, we're not really getting to a point where we say, what are we going to do about this? I'll just mention that the others, inadequate evaluation of information submitted. Now, you know, once again, that requires a unit or somebody to evaluate, and it also requires that information is, in fact, submitted. And then certainly also significant inconsistencies in the information supplied between what the provinces are telling you and what your information is. But they all relate to the same problem. But still, you know, I don't have a clear picture as to what it is that the department can do or can't do. And if you can't do anything about it, I think, you know, you should really just say, well, look, we can't. And then SCOPA must talk about it and we must see what can we, you know, what we can do about it. We don't like a situation where there's something in place which is impractical, if that's the point, can't be implemented, and then we go on insisting that you implement something which you simply can't implement. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yes, no. My understanding of your initial question would certainly relate to non-compliance with the department's own rules that govern the disbursement of funds to NGOs, because here you have payments the level of 35 million, not 3,500, 35 million rand to NGOs without the availability of an updated service level agreement. So it means that your officials at the lower level who approve or whoever approves find approved on things that have not met all the requirements as laid down. So you have a challenge of monitoring. It's a management function which requires that from your level there has to be some tightening up to ensure that whatever procedures and policy positions are there are followed to the letter. To then have NGOs submitting after they got the money goes against there. And I would imagine that we'll probably, because I think this challenge was there even in the previous financial year, where you find that disbursements were made over and above what, in terms of the laid down policies, could have been approved. So it talks to the question of compliance and the question of monitoring. The policies are there, the rules are there, but somebody in the system just has a blind eye. Now, you would want to have that one tightened up.
Okay.
Now, the one question that we're earlier dealing with around monitoring in relation to the conditional grants vis-a-vis the broader picture around monitoring provinces. I think there's an inclination in the committee that maybe we need to meet with you again, but with the provincial head, so that they can answer to some of these things, because really, there is no way in which you can respond to some of these issues. Why are there delays? Why is the quality not good? Why are the reports not comprehensive? Those are questions you're asking, but you also want to ask them to those people as well. So there is that inclination in the committee that we may need to have the provinces come here. But I think the question of monitoring that you have had all these discussions about whether to have specific capacity for conditional grants, this would be the broader picture. I would imagine that we certainly from ourselves, we would not necessarily want to say have capacity to monitor conditional grants only. We would want to say whatever capacity for monitoring that you develop should ensure that even conditional grants are adequately monitored, so that you don't have capacity to monitor conditional grants, then you develop another capacity which can then lead to that project, bureaucracy. But I think overall, we're saying whatever monitoring mechanism we put in place, its effectiveness and its impact must also deal with conditional grants. So whether you have one unit that monitors everything or you do it separately, that's a technical question that will lead to you. But I think the general thrust, the strategic thrust is, let's have capacity to monitor what we put into progress. So I think if we approach it from that angle, it gives us some flexibility, and I think we can be able to make some movement in that direction. But I do want to stress that we will most definitely want to have the provinces here so that we could hear from them exactly what their challenges are.
Yes, Chair. I've heard what you're saying, and I concur with you, sadly, because if you read the annual report of the department, you can see that clearly you are involved in trying to monitor hospital services generally, not just in respect of, the few hospitals that you've come from directly from the spot. I mean, if you look at your hospital services objectives and things, you say, and during the reporting period, the department recorded several key milestones towards strengthening the management and governance of public hospitals. Then you go, I won't go through, but clearly, in order to have done that, as you said, you've got to have get that information from him. So I think, Chair, you've made a very good point. But I think what we need to do is, and I wanted to come back, and this will be my final question, Chair, for now, is you said that it would lead to you having a bloated civil service. Now, unless you can sort of quantify that, then I think we should be a little careful of saying that. Clearly, we don't want you to spend one rand to disperse two rands. I mean, that would be ridiculous. But do you know, in fact, what requirements or what the cost of having a proper monitoring system in place would be? And if you don't have that information, then I suggest that perhaps that's what you need to do. To do an evaluation, say, what is it that we need to have a unit that can actually do all of this monitoring, as the Chair has mentioned, so that your relationship with the provinces is going to improve, and clearly then that the health services generally will improve. I would imagine, because that is your role, to play an overarching monitoring role. After all the provinces operate within your framework, the framework policy, health policy. And I think, I think perhaps let's leave it at that for now, because the suggestion that we made at Scopus to get everybody together around the same table, I think is a very good idea, and maybe we then conclude this questioning on that note. Thank you.
I don't know if there's anything you want to say, DJ, but I think maybe this thing around grants to provinces, maybe let us pack it and get the provinces to come, so that we can then have a much more comprehensive discussion around the matter.
You had dealt with it already, and that was the payment of money without actually receiving, you mentioned the case of the NGOs. Perhaps we should just get an answer on that, how that occurred.
No, Chair, thank you very much. On the provincial issues, I'll take your guidance on that. On this transfer payment, Chair, just to say also that this, although it occurred in a different way in terms of the NGOs, last time, which was more about monitoring, and in the same way as the provincial part. This particular instance relates to transfers to Love Life when the business plan had actually been expired, the sort of contractual business plan had expired. And part of the challenge, of course, as the chair says, we need to ensure that we tighten our controls such that we would be able to pick up that such a business plan is expiring and needs to be renewed before we're overtaken by the need to transfer the money, because the service has to be actually delivered. So I do concede that the issue is sometimes in relation to whether the controls are such that we can be able to pick up on time and demand that the business plan actually is in place. Because in this instance, it was more a decision to say there's a program going on, and we know what the program is and what it's doing. So there should have been an earlier kind of intervention to ensure that the business plan, though, is updated. And as the chair says, it's a matter of perhaps tightening further our controls to be able to ensure that that happens. But that's in the context of Love Life.
Can the committee be assured that you will tighten up your controls regarding these matters generally?
Just as we continue to do, Chair, we will continue to tighten them up.
All right. It all boils down to the human factor. It all boils down to leadership. So, I must say that the question of the high vacancy rate in the department, to which I think you concede, if you look at the I think it's your report on page 16, it does indicate 6.3, the first paragraph. The National Department was faced with the shortage of skills in the health field. This impacted on policy development as well as monitoring of health programs implemented at provincial level. So, whilst we have challenges in terms of provinces being able to respond adequately, the National Department also does have a challenge in terms of having the requisite personnel that should be able to do the actual monitoring. And I think a whole range of other things, 6.4, that actually relate to the challenges that the department has. But anyway, thank you very much, Honorable Trent. Comrade Fugeng.
Well, thank you, Chair. Thank you, DJ. DJ, I think we have been all along trying to encourage and pleading to all departments that please try to make sure that we get the high rate of unemployment. And then I see it's not only your department. Most of the departments all around have got a problem on vacancies, yet they are budgeted for. Will you agree with me that the cost of some of the delays in deliveries and the tackling the priorities is because of the problems of the high rate of unemployment, of the vacancies that you did not have? Do you see that as a problem?
Not exactly. Not 100%. Honorable member,
what percentage out of 100?
Well, in the case of health, I would say that would account for about 10 to 20% only. And I can explain why, Chair. The paragraph you've read is a very telling explanation for this in the first place. You see, it refers to certain categories of employees whom we are not able to find, we compete with the market. Pharmacists are just one example, particularly for the national department. This relates to the medicines section. We have had to take measures, for example, to improve the salary levels of pharmacists in order to be able to recruit them. Because it's not an unemployment that they are there sitting unemployed, but they are in the private sector or in other fields feeling that those are better places and better paying places than government. So this relates largely to scarce skills.
Where would you locate, say, pharmacists, for example, within your four programs, administration, strategic health programs, health service delivery, human resources?
Both second and third, health service delivery and strategic health programs. I would locate them in both. Because, for example, you'll see also here that it says this led to inadequate capacity for the evaluation of medicines, including bioequivalence and pharmacovigilance. In other words, it led to a situation where, not able to say when we actually say this medicine is now registered in South Africa, part of the responsibility is for us to be able to see what effect it is having in the public, even though we have actually, we need pharmacists to be able to follow up on that in the medicine control arena. So it leads to those kinds of challenges.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair.
Complete.
I want you to follow up, otherwise I will miss it.
Oh, okay. You shall do it.
Thank you for that. I see. I mean, I understand what you are saying, especially when you answered question on administration. But it seems that we see vacancy rate increasing year after year instead of decreasing. Between 2005 and 2006, you had plus and minus 22% on that. And then 2006 and 2007, you have plus and minus 43.5% of that. Now, that means if I locate myself to that, you had number of positions in 2005 and 2006, which were 409. You were able to fill in 320, which minus you with 89. That was 2006. And 2006 and 2007, you had number of positions of 414, and you managed to locate 234, which gives you minus 180. That is a big figure. Are you worried about that, or is it because of skills problem on that administration? What is really going on there?
Perhaps I need to go back a bit and say that the figures that are reflected in our annual report, we had the figures and as reconciled and then finalized by ourselves. However, we took a step to exactly say what was the problem when we saw the figures ourselves, well, because we don't believe we were having such a growing vacancy rate, but that's what we're getting from the system. And what we then discovered, Chair, again, which is a human error issue, was that the problem is not necessarily that we have those vacancies. The problem is that we are not abolishing the posts that were supposed to be abolished. And therefore, when we create other posts and not abolish those that are supposed to be abolished, then the organization grows and reflects vacancies, when in fact they are not supposed to be vacancies. They are supposed to be abolished posts, because we have actually particular reasons for why we abolish and restructure these posts and therefore create others.
So,
for example,
maybe let's do this. The figures that we're having in the annual report, do they still reflect those human errors, or are they reconciled figures?
What I'm saying, Chair, is that the figures we have in the annual report reflect those human errors.
So they are not correct?
They are not correct, in our view. Because we have actually gone back to the figures afterwards. You know, when we're doing the annual report, we found that this is the situation and we need to finalize the report. But we went back to the problem to say what exactly is happening with our vacancies. Why are we not filling the post? And when we scrutinized, we found that, in fact, our vacancy rate would sit at about 17% or so, in reality. So it's part of that problem that we've just discovered, that it's actually a human error thing where certain things are not done in order to ensure that we keep our picture correct.
There's no proper sufficient monitoring.
Certainly.
Those are supposed to be doing their work.
With regards to that one, yes, I would want to concede that that's the gap we've identified in that area.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Does this impact on your budget? Is it also a force? I mean, the budget, if the figures are wrong, is the budget budgeted for those figures is also over budgeted, or will I be wrong if I say that?
Not exactly. You will find that the personnel budget would reflect the situation that I'm actually referring to, and not the situation as reflected in the figures that are actually here. In other words, the organizational figures that are here would mean that we have an underfunded personnel budget, but that's not the case, not that much.
Lastly, will I be correct to say that year to year, 2005 and 2006, you realize that the 343 were abolished, and then unfortunately was a human error put there. And then instead of correcting it, unfortunately it went higher and higher. In the year 2006 and 2007, it came to 465. And then again, you were still addressing it, or you realized it after two-year period.
If you can help me, Honorable Member, I'm not sure which part you are referring to, but for reference purposes.
I made some calculations. On administrations, I said you had about 189. And then on strategic health programs, you had 127 vacancies. On health and service delivery, you had about 72. Human resources, you had 106. Adding all those, they come to 465, which were not occupied. Now, that's why I'm asking now, that you realized it in 2005 and 6, which was a little bit lower, it was 343, but now instead of going down, after you have realized it jumped and went 465 instead of coming down. So I'm worried because 2007 and 8, it might go to 1,000. I was arguing with another department and say, if you take 1,000 from your department and then you multiply it with plus and minus 30 some more departments, then we find that the government is causing unemployment. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. Now I understand. The realization I'm talking about is actually after this annual report, and not after the 2005-2006 one. In other words, those posts that are now growing actually should have been abolished posts. They should be reflected as posts that are to be abolished as a result of reorganization and redirection. So they're not vacancies per se. That would actually say there's a vacancy here. But abolish post.
Yeah, you see, DG, for many years here in Scopa, we were the chairperson and two conveners, three posts. But I do get a sense that it's like departments are continuously re-engineered. That's why you would have a post today, next year there is a new post created, and a post that was there last year is abolished and a new post is created. What exactly is happening? Just for you, for my own understanding, because from what you're saying is you have a particular number of posts in the department. Then the following year you created a particular set of different posts, which then adds to the numbers in terms of the number of posts that you have. How does this come about?
Chair, sometimes let me take an example of what I was talking about. If we had four vacant pharmacy posts at grade 9-11, for example, and then we realized that we have a problem with pharmacists. In fact, if we continue to recruit them at the level of grade 9, we're not getting them. We need to perhaps upgrade those levels to grade 12. What is supposed to happen is that when the people who are supposed to be preparing that process actually request the executing authority to create posts of pharmacists at grade 12 level, at the same time as they do that, they should be requesting that we abolish the post at the grade 9-11 level. Because what would happen then is that there's a duplication of the same post. It's still the same pharmacist we need. The number is still the same, but the problem is that we are now actually upgrading the post. So we do not, what happens is that in their books, they don't then abolish those posts and then they are said to be vacant. But they are actually not vacant. They are supposed to have been abolished because their level has been upgraded to grade 12. And so that's just one example that you'll find where people keep them the old post in their books, and we say we have vacancies of four pharmacists, but we actually have four pharmacists. It's just that those four pharmacists are now at grade 12, but we still have grade 9 four posts, which were not abolished in the establishment.
But that for me sounds too elemental. Why would a person not abolish that? I mean, if people can't do such elementary things, what exactly is that reflecting in terms of the general attitude towards work, in terms of the general orientation and generally the kind of personnel that you have that wouldn't do such an elementary thing? And maybe even going back to the question of monitoring, those right management levels, why can't these things be picked up? I mean, really, I don't understand this.
Well, Chair, in this particular case, we would say perhaps one of the what we have identified as a department is that because of the way we are structured at the moment, which we have corrected in the next phase, we do not have a dedicated corporate services section that would actually be at a higher level of supervision, because it's part of the branch on human resources, which would be much more concerned about the health system in broad terms, and not about the less so about the departmental thing. So we have restructured to build capacity as well, expanding the capacity of the department to be able to perform its duties. I mean, for example, now we have only three DDGs, and I think our new organogram has added three more DDGs because of the tasks that we actually, and one of which is just focusing on corporate services and corporate affairs. So it could actually be, yes, attitude, but supervision also is not adequate, and I agree. It has to be then beefed up, and those that are able to we have to deal with those gaps where there's a capacity problem, which is what we've done in the new organogram for the next financial year.
Yeah, no, indeed. I think the question of monitoring is coming again and again and again. The question of monitoring, adequate monitoring. I think that's where the challenge is, to have senior managers really doing their work, because people don't comply with the internal policies and procedures and get away with it. It only means that there is nobody who is actually supervising or monitoring their work. And again, I would want to stress that I think it is an area that does need to be strengthened, so that everybody performs on the straight and narrow. Right. Hey, are you done, Comrade?
Yeah, I just want to ask one.
Just a minute. Comrade, are you done?
That is fully done. I think you are just full of stuff.
Yeah, but are you done yourself? Are you through?
No,
I want to check with him whether he's through or not.
Yeah, I can say I'm through on the second.
Okay, all right.
Chair, I just want to ask a question around the systems, and not the actual vacancies, because, you know, I understand it's a dynamic process. You're adding posts, you're restructuring, you're abolishing, you know, it's an ongoing process. But at the end of the day, surely you must have a database which tells you who do you pay at the end of the month, or the 15th of the month, and that is surely the number of people that are actually working for you in the particular thing. And now, this is why I can't understand why you tell us that these figures you publish are not correct. Now, why would you publish figures that are not correct? You know, that's not understandable, because this is an annual report on which we rely. It's a public document now. Now, I can't understand how your figures can't be reliable unless there's something wrong with your system, which records the database that people are paying. If there's something wrong with that, then we might have other problems. There might be people being paid for abolished posts. You know, so that's where I have a problem. So the question is, are you happy that your system is working effectively? And if so, how come you tell us that these figures here are not correct? Because that doesn't add up.
Well, first, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, let me start by saying that the organogram that you have here, or the figures that you have here, do not reflect people that you are paying. It reflects the number of posts that are supposed to be in the department. Others may not necessarily be filled. That's why you have vacancies. So, if you asked us to actually say who are you paying for what post, we'll be able to produce that, and the system will be able to do that. So once you move beyond that to a point where you're talking about vacancies, indeed, as I said, systems work with human beings, and if there is, as the chairperson is suggesting, if there is perhaps inadequate supervision of those processes, both at the level of the people that are implementing them and at the level of the people that would have to supervise them, then we have the figures that we have, which we acknowledge are actually not a reflection, because when we then had to do a thorough analysis, we found that actually there's a duplication of figures, and therefore we are counting wrongly in terms of the number of vacancies that we've got. So indeed, I agree with the chair that it's an issue of whether people do proper auditing and supervision to be able to say, okay, now where is our organogram? Is it actually correct or not? Okay.
Can you have your mic on, Honourable Chair?
Employment means that somebody's employed. It's not an organogram. An organogram is a structure. And employment means that person is actually employed. And if it means that the vacancy, it means that they are not employed. And to me, so I think you've got to just perhaps adjust your heading so that people are quite clear as to what
which page are you referring to, Honourable Chair?
Well, yeah, it's a whole, you know, the whole series of pages there from 61 on, where they give human resource management and then they give the figures. Well, I mean, you know, the figures that they give. And then at the end, you've got employment and vacancies by critical occupation.
Which page?
Page 64. It says employment and vacancies. Now, in my book, employment means that those people are employed. you know, and vacancies means that they are not. Now, if the state, this is the organogram or, you know, the structure, well, then we would understand. But when you talk of money that you're paying, you've got to be able to reconcile it with the number of people that are being employed. I understand your explanation, but I think you must just then change the way you present these figures so that people are quite clear to what is meant by that.
No, I think, Honorable Trent, the figures there are very clear. And what the DG said about the question of post-establishment, which adds to the other cases, I don't think that is a contradiction. And because what you were saying was that once a post is upgraded, the lower grade not abolished. So what it does is that it creates a vacancy where there was none, or if there were two, it will add one and make them three. And that is what they are going to sort out. So what we're having on page 64 is the number of posts. Say, for example, let me take the simplest one, which I was to ask, why is it not filled? Cleaners in offices, workshops, and hospitals. It says number of posts 72. Number of posts filled 63. I don't think that we're running short of skills in that department. Now, it might as well be that actually you have 67 posts, not necessarily 72. So that is what they must fix up, so that the figures that they give us as vacancies are a true reflection of what is. I think that's the point that he was trying to make. Now, in terms of the people who are actually employed, I think that is not the part we've spoken about. Our assumption is that they are clear about the number of people who are employed that they are paying every month. That part has no confusion. The confusion part is on the number of vacancies in the department.
When I listened to the questioner, Honorable Mofokeng indicated the number of vacancies. And then his argument was that the rate of vacancies is rising as compared to the previous year. But now the DG responded that there were some posts that were abolished. I would have thought he should have indicated exactly how many posts are vacant. I mean, from the number that Honorable Mufugeng had given, how many posts are vacant? I think that he should have clarified that point, not just other posts are vacant. Now, how many posts are vacant exactly?
All right, let's do it this way. Suspecting that you will not be able to off the cuff say in this department with so many supposed vacant posts, the extra number is this. Can you be able to supply us with the list? That will say, in terms of what we've given you with 72 vacant posts for cleaners, the actual number is 62. On this post, on this program, because so many, the actual number is this one, so that you can actually see the discrepancies and actually attach also the percentage at the end that these represent 26%, the actual ones represent 17%. I think in that way it will bring closure to the matter.
No, thank you, Chair. We will do that, but just for the honourable member's interest, as at the 7th of October, we had already abolished 113 posts. In other words, you can minus those vacancies and minus 113 as at the 7th of October. So, in other words, but we will update it because we are trying to clean up.
No. Just send us something very comprehensive.
Thank you, sir. I think having said that, just to round it up, I think the statement has to be received and then corrected. When answering the auditor, the department said the department submitted that
The department experiences high vacancy levels in excess of 26.5% and acknowledge the word acknowledgement. It says it acknowledged.
Where are you reading that okay?
No, that was the answer they gave to the
answer. Is it in the briefing note or in the annual report?
Briefing.
Briefing note.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Acknowledge that this is a major impediment to the acceleration of safe delivery and economic growth. So it means that answer is not correct. So the problem of deliveries is not because of the staff vacancies. It might be lying somewhere, and then we have to be corrected. And I'm not making a question, but I'm saying we need to find out how can we assist this department to find out how do we fulfill our deliveries. Chair, can I just pass to the last question and then on audit? Fine. According to the treasurer's report and regulations and proof of an agreement, the audit committee meets 4 times in a year. But during the year 2006, I am now on audit. The year 2006, they met on, if I'm correct, on the 16th of February. On October last year. And the second meeting was on the 16th of February 2007. Up to now, they have never met. They have only met twice. In the year 4 times. And then this is the committee supposed to be dealing with the monitoring. Now, my appeal around that was that if we need to assist or the scope to be involved, not to be seen attacking, I had already submitted previous year to say, how about giving us a report on a quarterly? I know it's going to be too much, but if it is on a quarterly, we shall be able to be involved with you and say that fine. On March, you told us that you are left with so many vacancies, but now it's now June. They are not yet on the second report. Then we shall be able to move together and then be involved, and then we are not going to accuse anybody indirectly or fairly to say, look, you are the one who has done this after 12 months along the line. So that is my argument that I would like to know how can we come up to solve this problem.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Just on that page that the Honorable Member is referring to, the paragraph after the list of members which says that the members of the reconstituted Audit Committee were appointed in October. That was already towards the end of the financial year anyway. And then their first meeting was held in December and then the second one in February. In other words, the two meetings that are referred to are within a period where, in fact, prior to that, as we had said, we had challenges with the previous audit committee. So, in fact, for us to actually even have a report of this nature from the audit committee is indeed an improvement from the previous year, because you'll recall that in the previous year there was no report from the chairperson of the audit committee. Subsequent to that, up to now, I think the audit committee has been meeting regularly, even more than 4 times, if I'm not mistaken, already, because it's been concerned with trying to establish itself and ensure certain things are happening. So we have a vibrant audit committee now, whereas we didn't have before in the previous financial year.
But what kind of support does the audit committee get from you as the DG and the UDDG or senior management?
Well, from our point of view, in fact, the chairperson and I meet when it's necessary and when she feels it's necessary for us to meet one-on-one, go through all sorts of issues. The DDGs and the CFOs participate, and the chief director. There is a standing agreement between the audit committee and ourselves that the senior managers are going to attend all audit committees meetings, and when necessary, the audit committee may require certain cluster managers, chief directors, to come and answer on specific things if they are focusing on them. And we have discussed, for example, issues of the internal audit capacity. They have raised those issues. We are working together to look at the review of the capacity, and we've finalized that. I think the audit committee has now finalized what is proposed as a new capacity in the internal audit. So the point is, we're working together, and there's a lot of support on our part, where possible.
Where possible.
In other words, when they require that.
When necessary. Not where possible.
When necessary, yeah.
Okay. We do need to stress that the support of senior management is very critical in ensuring that the audit committee performs its work effectively. And if from your side you find the current arrangement with the chairperson effective and workable, then it will continue. But maybe you may need to consider a structured way of interaction. I'm not being prescriptive. I'm just saying if you find the current arrangement where you meet as and when she feels there is need, and it works for the department, good and fine. But it is a new audit committee, and you don't want a one step forward, two steps back. As Lenin said, that it collapses back into what you had experienced in the previous committee. To have some structured way of interaction, so that from your level as well, you know, you are able to keep your finger on the pulse to ensure that things are going accordingly. No, thanks very much for that one. Right, Comrade Bono.
Comrade Chair, through you, I've got a few questions to ask. I want to go back to page 138, the National Tertiary Services Grant. And despite the DORA regulations and despite Section 1, well, how perfect we're training and developing national tertiary...
Comrade Bonham, which page are you referring to?
138. Yeah.
Okay.
It says the health department, the health professional training and development and national tertiary services allocation may not be withheld in terms of the section. In view of the above mentioned, the transfer to the value of 196 million were made to the province prior to the reset, to the receipt of the signed service legal arrangements. I just want to see if I can get an explanation of that and how these things happen, Chair.
I think in some way that question must have been dealt with. I'm not stewarding for the department. I just remember that maybe in a generic form, that question around why certain disbursements were done before the necessary paperwork was done. It might not have reflected the thing at all. The issue at hand, but I think in a generic way it was asked. So maybe let's pass that one and move to the next one.
That's fine, Chair. I just want to go back to the asset management, and according to the AG's report. Is due to a lack of reconciliation between a fixed asset register and a basic accounting system that AG is unable to obtain adequate assurance regarding the negative adjustments totaling 31 million to the opening balance of 84 million stated in disclosure note 29, as the department does not provide sufficient and appropriate audit evidence for these adjustments. And that is a qualification there. Now, say with the above matters, it states that I'd like to have an answer from the DG Chair.
in relation to the to that matter, I think from my point of view, the Auditor General is actually presenting the picture as well, so it's a correct position. I'd like through you to request perhaps before I a final comment from my side, the CFO to say something to you.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Sir, on page 93 of our annual report, we've stated what we've done in terms of asset management. The problem that occurred in this particular instance was that the coding and the allocation in the LOGIS system and the BAS system gave us problems to this, in the sense that the negative adjustments that took place, and that's the example that I can give you, is that we, in the department, spent quite a lot of money on having the rebuilding the laboratories and the MBOD, that's the Medical Bureau of Occupational Diseases, in Johannesburg. When the final payment went through, the payment went through and eventually by way of the system ended up as buildings in our asset register. And we know that that those buildings need to be accounted for in the Department of Works books. Therefore, the assets were overstated. And please remember, asset management is an area of ongoing improvement and the hiring of the lifting of the bar. So, last year, the amounts as such were not audited. Only the additions were audited. This year, the amount in the asset register was also audited, and hence our adjustment down. Now, up to the, very close to the end of the audit, we were still, together with the Auditor General, quite happy that our assets were fine and there were no problems. It only transpired when the audit executive was able to compare our assets with other asset figures with other departments that it came to the fore that we had a negative adjustment whereas most other departments had a positive adjustment. And then the discrepancy came about. We've picked up the problem, and we have done the necessary work to do the reconciliations as required.
What was the problem?
The reconciliations was done, but it wasn't followed right through.
Done when? After the publication of the annual report? Or
It was done after the publication of the annual report, because at the time, well, it started during the time when the annual report was published, because we knew what the audit finding was. But it could not be corrected in time for the audit. So we then corrected and we're in the process of correcting and doing the reconciliations. We're doing the reconciliations.
No. Have you corrected it or you're in the process of correcting?
We're in the process of correcting.
So it's not corrected.
It's not corrected in terms of the figure work. The figure work as stands here is what was audited. We are now talking about the steps that we've taken subsequently to correct the problem.
No. What I'm saying is that you are in the process of correcting it, or have you already corrected it?
We are in the process of correcting it.
All right. Okay.
We've also trained our staff, and we're keeping a very close eye on making sure that this problem will not reoccur. I must also add, Honourable Chair and Members, that the LOGIS system is not a friendly system to operate, and it is exceedingly user unfriendly. And maybe let me just stop there. Thank you.
Okay, no, fine. Yes, commit.
Chair, as the rest has been covered, so I won't go to take at the end over there.
Right, Comrade.
Okay, thank you. I'd just like to ask the DG
I want to take you to the report of the audit committee on page 95. The second paragraph says there, the audit committee consists of members listed here under and meets four times per annum, as is per approved terms of reference. During the current year, two meetings were held. There are four members on your audit committee. Only three of them have attended these two meetings, which is half of what they're supposed to do, which raises serious questions of how serious these people take their job. But what worries me the most, Chair, is, and I would like clarity on this, the very next paragraph says here, the members of the reconstituted audit committee was appointed late in the year, October 2006. The committee held its first meeting in December 2006 and the second meeting in February 2007. Now, if you look at the signature here at the bottom of the page, signed by the chairperson of the audit committee, the date for that signature...
What page is that?
This is on page 95, Chair. Now, in the middle of the left-hand column, it says here, the first meeting was in December 2006 and the second meeting February 2007. Yet the date, which is signed by the chairperson of the audit committee, says it was signed on the 12th of the ninth month. In other words, that is 7 months later. Now, if they didn't meet since February, and they only signed the documents in September. Please help me. I might be completely off the track, but it looks like somewhere there's a meeting missing.
Yeah, no. I'll help you complete here as your chair. There's everything correct in all the things that you have mentioned. The report of the audit committee, it's only up to the end of March. So from the end of March up until when they signed, it's another financial year. Yeah. So everything is on track as far as that is concerned. Yeah.
Chair, this was signed on the 12th of September, and the report says there was a second meeting on February. Okay.
Yeah, you see, there's a lot of work we're doing, so please understand. And we don't want to miss anything. We don't want to miss anything. It is actually a measure of the vigilance with which committee members do their work. Report.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check whether there is any contradiction here. I don't seem to understand. Somewhere with regard to monitoring. On page 93 of the annual report, the second paragraph on the right, in 2005-2006, the National Department of Health and National Treasury agreed on a common tool for monitoring the implementation of annual performance plans of provinces with a view to decreasing the reporting burden on provinces. Now, on page 97, now there is a statement there under lack of monitoring. All the above matters were also reported in the 2005-2006 audit report. I just want those two statements reconciled because in my opinion, there is some contradiction. I just want clarity whether I'm correct.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the Honourable Member will realize that even on page 93, as was discussed earlier on, reference is being made to the reporting burden on provinces with regard to non-financial performance reports, which are about everything that provinces do. That's what that refers to. It's part of the quarterly reports that the provinces are supposed to, on non-financial performance, which they are supposed to actually give to National and National Treasury. Now, the audit focuses on an aspect of that, which is the conditional grant, within the context of the broader reporting requirements. So, in that regard, the two are not necessarily contradictory. As the chair suggested, maybe what we need to do is to strengthen our monitoring in an overall sense, so that it's able to also cover all that ground in the same way. We'll have to look into that. We have a different, and that's part of the possibilities, but there are other possibilities. One of which may be that some of these conditional grants, we may review them to actually see whether they kind of be earmarked funding in the provinces and ring fence. But the two statements are not contradictory.
Right. I think my understanding, Rapule, is that what you have on page 93 is... what you have on page 93 is a conceptual framework of what needs to be done to enhance monitoring. On 97... is the assessment of the implementation of that framework by the AG, which found that it is not adequate.
Yeah. Right. I would like to give you the last chance.
The question. I just need clarity, and I don't want to belabor the point. So on page 65, where you say number of posts filled 1,291, then that figure is correct. Okay. Now that's really what I wanted to know. So the problems. So when you said that the figures are not correct, you weren't just talking to the whole set of figures. No, that's fine. I'm happy with that. That's all I wanted to know.
All right.
Then, hang on, Chair, there's one issue that we haven't dealt with, which I think is important. Chair, there's an issue that we haven't dealt with.
Please. Otherwise, you'll be having a monologue with the.
No, I'm finished with that. No, no, see, there's another issue we haven't dealt with, which has been dragging on now for 4 years, and it's a very simple question.
I'm just saying that it is important that the whole interaction must not turn into a threat with the department.
Break the ice a little bit, Chair. Non-compliance with the National Environmental Management Act, and the Auditor General reports now that you have not... come with the environmental plan, and you should have done so within a year after the promulgation of the Act. It's now 4 years. Simple question, why not, and have you done it now, and if not, when will this be done?
Honorable sir, let me say that from an administrative point of view, the plan has been developed, and it had been developed even by the time the Auditor General did the audit. The only challenge is that it has to be finalized at a political level, and we are working on that, because I think we have to find a way to have a final discussion at a political level, then it will be signed off. So from our point of view, it has been developed, but it's not financed. As the Auditor General says, there's no plan on the table because it's not been authorized and approved appropriately. So that would be my response, that we do have a plan now, but we just have to do the necessary political endorsement.
So when I come to do your 208 audit, you'll have the plan available.
I would really work very hard to ensure that is the case.
You have a few months.
Yeah, no. If what is left is the signature of the political, then just take it to the politicians to affix the signatures. That shouldn't be
that very difficult if the lesser administrative work has been done.
Chair, then just my last question, which is to do with performance.
Will that be the last?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Well, we still have time. I'm very encouraged by the fact that you've got under your program hospital services. You've got objectives with regard to improvement of the management of hospitals, and they nicely set out, and most of them one can measure, and you've done fairly well. My question simply is that because this is a program which is aimed at improving all the hospitals within the provinces, are these objectives also aligned to the provincial, the various provinces? Because clearly it's a team effort, it's an effort between your department and the 9 provinces. I'm very encouraged by this, and the question simply is, are these objectives aligned with the provinces?
Yes, Honourable Member. You would find that in many of the annual reports of the provinces, the same kind of objectives would be reflected.
Yes, your objective, of course, would just give you an average. Clearly, if you want, you would be able to see. That's what I'm really asking. You would be able to see which provinces are not meeting and which are, so you would be able to assist. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. There may be one or two issues that still do need to be cleared. I am looking at the, on page 15, overview of organizational environment. And I do see that it says for 2005-2006. Is that what it was supposed to be? The hospital revitalization program, it says that in some instances programs had to be stopped because of lack of resources. I think the other time we're saying that the province are not able to spend, and now we're saying they are overspending on that program. Are there any measures taken to ensure that we have money? I mean, we just had a budget surplus, we have rollovers of billions, and yet we don't have money to revitalize hospitals.
Honourable Chair, on our part, we would say that the conversation between us and the Treasury is ongoing to actually see how we can find ways to revitalize hospitals. If in the context of a challenge is correct with resources. So in other words, our view is that we have turned around the challenges in relation to under expenditure in the program, and it has performed very well in many across the board, let us put it that way, except in minority instances. And now the challenge is the pace at which we can do that and the resources necessary. So there are discussions with National Treasury with regard to finding the resources that are actually necessary for this, or alternative ways of resourcing the program.
I do see you have the trading entity mines and work compensation, the compensation committee for occupational diseases. It doesn't look like we have their annual report, do we? And it doesn't look like they are doing that well, are they?
Well, Chair, there are two bodies in relation to mining. There is one which you're referring to, and the annual report, I think, is supposed to be from the Compensation Commissioner. It's supposed to be finalized. I think it will be tabled on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. So the ones that are doing the evaluations fall within the MPOD, but there's the compensation commissioner, the commissioner's report that's still pending.
Friday. I think it should be tabled on Friday.
Okay. If we look at your statement of financial performance on page 114, on expenditure, financial transactions in assets and liabilities, I don't think I've checked note 6, but can it be unbundled a little bit? I mean, if you look at 205, 206, it was an amount of 778,000, and the following year it has jumped to about 3,523,000. I'm not sure whether which one has increased, the financial transactions or is it the liabilities, and what will this be?
But if we can refer you to page 121.
Yeah, I'm there.
Is it?
Yeah, 121, yeah.
Okay. Which actually explains 114.
Yeah, if we could talk to it a little bit.
Equipment, as indicated, the forensic laboratories has been subject of an upgrading program, and we invested with money that we obtained from Treasury as a specific program, quite a lot of money to upgrade the equipment in those laboratories to get it to a state-of-the-art system. The 44 million, and that was the 24 million that we're referring to, and in fact, we also had to have a rollover because of the long delivery times being quoted, because these machinery equipment is imported from abroad. The 44 million in terms of the computer software is a system that we purchased for the human resource monitoring program, which we are introducing and that we are working on. It was done by way of open tender, and the 44 million is the first tranche of the investment in that particular system.
No, that's fine.
Chair, excuse me, if I can take you back to note 6 on the salary debt issue. If we could ask, even though the CFO said they would give you a written answer, but if we could ask Andre to perhaps try and explain it.
Yeah, not sure. If we have an explanation, fine. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. The salary debt is mainly housing guarantees, where a staff member has resigned and we couldn't recover the money from the pension. So there we had a number of write-offs we had to do because those individuals couldn't repay the department. And then we are also faced with a challenge with regard to interns, where an intern is resigning and there is a salary debt occurring. We don't have any pension. They don't belong to the pension fund, and therefore we cannot recover the money from the pension fund. And in some cases, those interns don't get immediate re-employment, and therefore they're not in a financial position to repay our debts. But we are making a big effort in recovering these debts, and it's not just being written off. This is over a period of 2 to 3 years. If we are not succeeding in writing it off, then recovering it, then we are only writing it off. Thank you, Chief.
All right. Go to page 115. Your receivables. They've jumped from 6 million to 29 million. And if you go to note 12, which seeks to explain them. Your battery debt is changing. From 186 to 310, but your salary overpayment. Salary overpayment from 276 to 319. Loss or damage to state property from 38,212. Your other debtor, if you go to the bottom of that page, from 39,000 to 234. Can you talk to those items that I've touched on? Salary overpayments, loss or damage to state property from the increase, other debtors, I've left the other stuff, but generally, I mean, I'm saying there is that upsurge. What are they, and have we noted them with concern? Have we taken measures to try and address this? Because the dramatic shoot up from 6 million to 29, it's actually more than quadrupled. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it is a note of, and we've noted the concern. On bursary debt, as an example, we've learned that a number of our bursary holders didn't make the exams, and therefore we need to recover those debts. And we've revised the whole bursary committee and to make sure that we don't just allocate bursaries, because through allocating bursaries, we're also placing a financial burden on those individuals who are not really succeeding in their studies and then need to repay the state, the department. So we are very cautious nowadays in awarding bursaries. And these, once again, these debtors is not only for the past financial year. It accumulates the figure. Then furthermore, the loss and damages to state properties. Yes, we suffered a number of losses through computer equipment which was stolen at one single item. About 5 computers and 4 notebooks were stolen from our stores. A burglary took place, and therefore the loss was significant. However, we've introduced measures to prevent those type of losses. We've appointed more security staff to assist in patrolling the area and to take care of our premises.
But you do know that the recent report about the violence in hospitals. I think the minister addressed that a few days ago. So, yeah, I hear you. Yes, you stepped up security and all that stuff. Well, let's hope it works. No, it's fine. I think the point is made.
Lastly, PG, it's where is this now? It's on page 90 on spending trends. Strategic health programs. You recall that in our earlier engagement, the last paragraph on the strategic health programs. Yeah, the under expenditure there. That program deals with the funding and monitoring of key programs, coordinating district health system, the national health information system, research prioritization, and norms and standards, and everything that has to do with all the major challenges that we're facing. And yet, we have that under expenditure. 3%, 3.5, but it is huge money, 75 million. Most of the under expenditure occurred in the cluster HIV and AIDS. With all the pressures that are there around this question, I would imagine that just like the hospital revitalization program, we need to have an over expenditure. You know, we in the private sector, of course, if you underspend, you are saved, the saving, and you can get a bonus for that. But in the public sector, I think we need to be giving you bonuses when you overspend, but of course appropriately. Because expenditure is service delivery. Under expenditure, it means no delivery of services. And I'm trying to link this DG with what we have on page 9. The left hand side of page 9, the second paragraph. I think it is the last sentence there. A restructured and reinvigorated South African National AIDS Council, chaired by the Deputy President, will provide leadership in the implementation of the National Strategic Plan for HIV/AIDS. I took note of will. it is futuristic, it is not reporting. And I do acknowledge that the council has met quite a number of times, unlike the last time when we met. Remember the concerns we're having around they have sufficient time to focus on this. I think there have been meetings, but if you look at the briefing notes of the Auditor General, yes, SANAC has met, but the although meetings were held by SANAC, no official meetings were held by the trustees of the South African National AIDS Trust as required by the Deed of Trust. I'm trying to put this together and say the apparent underperformance in that program, very critical program, and I can tell you that when I was at home, I had a challenge from one comrade who wanted guidance because a relative of his was dying. What can they do? And I phoned my cousin who is is a doctor in the provincial hospital in Mpumalanga. And the sense that we got was that if that person had to go to a hospital, she would find a very long waiting list by which time her turn comes to be assisted. It might have been too late. So it does appear that there is a bottleneck in that particular program. What measures are there? I know the plan has been hailed by everybody, fine, but the implementation, the monitoring, to ensure effectiveness.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I want to start by making a couple of distinctions. I'd like to make a distinction between the HIV and AIDS program and the conditional grant that transferred to the provinces, where in fact if you look at the performance, and I'm sure you were there in Parliament in terms of the adjustment estimates yesterday, you would have found that we are getting more money because of unpredicted expenditure and demand in relation to that program. So there is no under expenditure at the level of the program implementation in terms of treatment of the conditional grant at that level. The national department component of this is where the under expenditure is. And I'd like to suggest that it can be accounted for by a few factors. One was the delay in the Komanani tender. You remember we had that problem. Finally, we resolved that. That accounts for about 45% of that 75 million. In other words, because that's where the bulk of our prevention strategy lies. With regard to the comprehensive plan, the other components of that plan, which relate to matters such as nutrition and those areas of development, that's where also there have been, other than treatment and other than the supplementation of that treatment, there are other aspects of the comprehensive plan which in fact we have found that they are weak, we need to actually strengthen, and that's where the under expenditure is. And then finally, it's in the area of condoms. So it's our prevention, national prevention strategy, that's where the under expenditure has been. And it's regrettable because that's a very, very important area of intervention. In fact, the most important area of intervention is prevention. But in the delays in the contractual arrangement, for example, in the condom distribution, now we're going to find the same situation because we are stopping certain companies from delivering these condoms because of the defects that have been found. That will lead to under expenditure in that area because we won't pay for those defective condoms. And so it's in those kinds of areas where, because we are trying to be strict with the suppliers, we tend to have delays in the Komanani area because they said we can't really go to the next phase unless we understand what happened and what needs to be improved. Then we found a delay in the process and therefore the under expenditure as such. So that's the one part of the so that's in relation to the HIV and AIDS. To emphasize it's the national part of it, particularly the prevention side, and we believe that would be corrected.
Then, well, no, that's fine. It however does not diminish the seriousness of the need to.
Okay. Yes, you know, Chair, I agree. In relation to the trust, Chair, the committee will recall that we had actually said in the 2005-2006 discussions that we were looking at two things. One was either to reconstruct the membership of the trustees because of the nature, but also to look at whether the trust actually needs to continue given the fact that there were weaknesses in the standard side. Subsequent to that, we followed up, as we said to the committee, and the trustees meeting, I mean, did actually meet once to resolve, to at that stage they actually resolved that the trust should be dissolved only on condition that the money is not going to be lost to the HIV and the AIDS arena, because they were concerned that what would happen would be that it would then be taken back into the fiscal and then lost into that. So while we're investigating that, the view or what emerged was that because of the reinvigoration of the of SANAC itself, it became clear from the from an appeal from the various stakeholders there that that decision be suspended until we see the outcomes of the reinvigorated SANAC and the program of action that comes out from there. Now that's being finalized, I think, on the 28th of November. And it will therefore translate into a fast-track implementation of the trustee. So we are back to the issue of saying we need to therefore review the trust in relation to the membership, because then it's clear that the trust would have to continue given the new vibrancy that SANAC is actually coming up with. So we are looking at now, we've asked for nominations for the new trustees from the various stakeholders. We are restructuring it. And therefore, it will, like our audit committee, by the time we come back here, it will have actually met a couple of times.
All right. I think let us close it here. We have 3 minutes before the start of our next set of hearing. Let me thank you very much, DG, and the two officials. Indeed, I think today's hearing was was an improvement from our previous encounter. Like I said, let it not be one step forward, two steps back. As it happens, it happens in the lives of individuals, in the history of nations, and in the development of parties. Let it not happen. Let us move forward all the time and deal with all the constraints at the bottleneck that are there. Thank you very much. Let's have a 2 minutes if it was really alone, I would say old age break, but let us have a 2 minutes break and come back. Thank you.